Welcome to the How Writers Write podcast, a show focused on inspiring and empowering you to become a better writer. Come along as we deconstruct the tips, routines, and motivations of your favorite authors. In the end, it's all about getting your story onto the page. Welcome to episode 29, How Jennifer Probst Writes. I've had this series of interviews where we get started with our warm-up question. So I always have like one kind of transition question planned. And then poof, all of a sudden, we are at the end of our recording time. It's like the interview goes by in a flash. I felt this way with Jennifer. This was a special interview for me where I got to talk with Jennifer about some of my absolute favorite writing topics, and I can't wait to share it with you. And so now, without any further ado, here is the interview with Jennifer Probst. Welcome to the How Writers Write podcast. I am your host, Brian, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Jennifer Probst. Jennifer is a New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal best-selling author of, I counted this, so keep me honest, Jennifer, 24 novels, including the recently released Love on a Beach Avenue, which, as of this recording, which it is early May, is the number one book on the Amazon romance category. Pretty incredible to have you here. Her book, The Marriage Bargain, was ranked number 6 on Amazon's best books for 2012 and spent 26 weeks on the New York Times bestselling list. Her work has been translated in over a dozen countries, sold over a million copies, and was dubbed a romance phenom by Kirkus Review. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. I can't tell you how excited I am to be here.
Wonderful. So, I did a lot of research on you, and I have so many different ways that I could go to start this interview off. But I want to start with a new question. And okay, this is rooted in just taking a step towards positivity, even in challenging times. And I want to ask you a question, which is, in the past week, what is the greatest slash best slash biggest smile that you've had on your face?
I would say this past week, I've had, even in the midst of this crippling virus and a lot of negativity, I have had so much positivity this week. I will say I've been using the time to dig a little bit deeper into my business, into writing craft, which is the love of my life. And I was able to take a personal development seminar that was 8 hours on Saturday. And it completely filled me up because it made me realize the theme of it was courage as a leader. Mm. And all of the top motivating speakers would do a good half hour, 45 minute presentation right in my living room. So I like to take all of these things that great leaders say works for them and makes them successful. And then I try to twist it into what works for me and my process and my writing and my personal life. And so I think it's important to fill yourself up with good stuff from people who are looking at this as this can be an opportunity for you to do something different, to write a new book, to spend time with, you know, your family. I mean, spending time with my two boys that are teenagers. We'll sit there for an hour and play competitive board games, and I'm a really bad loser. Not a good mom thing to teach them, but like, but you know, if that's what happens. And I'm just taking as much joy as I can possible. And I think that's what you have to do, even when it's tough.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the topic was courage. I actually just did I do a Monday motivation podcast every Monday, and I did one on the courage to create and leaning into fear. And you know how courage isn't that you don't feel fear. You know, courage is that you feel fear, you feel it, feel it, feel it, yes, feel it, but still decide to take a step forward.
Yes, that is my favorite thing. I could literally talk about that for the next hour because I think it's just fascinating as a human and as an artist, the amount of fear and choices we have to make throughout our creative career.
Yeah. What, I mean, I would love to dig into this. So what are, when you did this seminar, which is awesome.
Yes.
And from the comfort of your home, which is even more awesome. And like, what were some of the big points that you feel had the biggest impact on you?
I think it was what we were saying is that you need to have the courage to look at what you're doing. And if something is not working, if something is not making you happy, if you feel trapped, this could be as easy as writers today, I find, are very ingrained in the more releases, the better. The faster, the better. You know, new releases sell backlists. New releases give money and give exposure. And I think there are so many career authors nowadays that feel burnt out or trapped within their brand, even if it's a successful brand. And so let's say they're, you know, known for erotic romance and they want to, you know, suddenly write a paranormal or a women's fiction or anything different. They feel paralyzed because they've built this empire, let's say, revolved around a certain thing. And to make a leap into something different has a lot of fear factor. And so I think that was the main thing that I took is that we have to be responsible and be brave for doing things in our career that will give us some joy too. Because writing is not, yes, it's a job. It's a hard job, the hardest job I've ever done. And I'm a business person and a writer. But after months of being not joyful doing writing, there's something wrong. There's something that you have to dig into and find out, is it burnout? Is it this? So I think that's what I came out of the most from the conference is to really look at your life and be really real with it and then make some hard choices sometimes. Is this what I want?
Yeah. Do you feel like there's changes you're going to make now as a result of that conference?
Yes, I have been thinking about this for a while. It's funny because last year, I'm just laughing because what has happened in the last couple of years is, and I think a lot of writers can relate, I will say to myself, this is the year I'm taking the entire summer off and I'm not going to get burnt out. I'm not going to do this. And then these amazing opportunities drop. You know, your agent says, this person wants a book or I want to write this book. And I am so grateful and humbled that people still want my work. That comes from that 12-year-old girl who was like, if I can get one reader to smile, I can die happy, you know? So right. I'm like, I have to take all these opportunities. And then every year in January, my husband and I will sit in the kitchen and I'll be like, babe, this year it's going to be different. And he's like, uh-huh, sure. And I said, nope, I'm only going to write 3 books this year. Oh, this is what's going to happen. No problem. I'm not going to like yell like a maniac and you're not going to have to, you know, throw dinner in my office like an animal at the zoo. And sure enough, I did it again and again. So this past year, I set my most ambitious schedule because I did a lot of traveling in 2019. I traveled to about 6 conferences doing speaking and workshops, and I wrote 5 books in 12 months. And that was kind of like the holy grail of all this stuff. And I'm tired. And the last book was wonderful, but I didn't feel the joy that I haven't felt that joy that I did in a while. And so I am making a decision that I think I need more time to breathe and refill the well and play in between books. So I'm going to start writing less books in the year. And that is my goal, really.
That's so beautiful. And I think really important. You said a line that really resonated with me, which I'm going to paraphrase, like it's not going to be word for word, but basically at a certain point, you can work so hard at this writing thing that it starts to feel like work in a way. Like you don't have the joy anymore that creation brings. And I think that's an important message. I think there's a lot of people, I have been in this boat. Maybe I'm just speaking more for myself, of feeling like, if only I had more time to work, or if only I could do this, or if only I could do that, and not recognizing, you know, there's this great quote I always say, but not recognizing the journey itself is home. Like just the fact of writing the book is what you're supposed to be doing. And if you can't take joy in the writing of the book, it's kind of like, what's the point? Not what's the point, but it certainly is like you said, there's like a reevaluation necessary.
Yes. I love everything that you said. And I think there's so many of us, we're on the hamster wheel. I mean, this is our culture, but that to me, my personal opinion, it's almost contradictory of the creative soul, where we pay attention and process and daydream. A big thing that I see with the children nowadays, my 15-year-old, he's so adorable. He's got the writing bug. I say, good luck, kid, you know, but I will see him and he reminds me of me because he's there, but he's not there. Like, I can't tell you how many times during the day I'm like, Jake, and then I just wait because he's not with us. But there's so many kids, they don't know what that's like because there's no more boredom. There's no time to daydream or think or fantasize or be bored to kick off the creative gene, because we have our phones and our videos and everybody's always talking and social media is coming out at you. And I think that during this quarantine, to me, it's a turning back. It's like, let's get some quiet back in our lives. Let's dream and journal and imagine and maybe we can come out of this different.
Yeah. That is such, I just have like warm fuzzies all over me. One of the things I wanted to kind of dig into here and see if you have a perspective on it is the use of energy. And it sounds like that there's like this is a big passion project, not passion project, but big thing I'm really passionate about, which is like this, we get very focused on the idea of time and using our time, but within that, nestled within that is our attention and our energy that we use that time on, right? And so I can have all the time in the world, but with no energy, it's pointless. And the inverse is also true. I can have all the energy in the world, but without time, it's pointless. And so as you're feeling like your energy bucket is depleted, and you're like, I've written too much, I need to write less, I need to play more and invest more in myself, what are some of the ways you found for yourself as a writer, professional writer, working writer, that you add energy back into yourself?
Okay. So I believe that everybody is different. So I will give you what works for me because everybody has different qualities that fill them up and qualities that empty them. For me, reading is always a big passion. I'm one of these writers who I will scold you if you tell me I have no time to read because all I do is write. Then you are lacking, I just believe you are lacking of bringing a certain element back into your work, because reading outside of all genres brings in other things into your fields, other visions, other words, other viewpoints. And I think it's so important because as a writer, the more we experience and take in, it's like we have the input. And we have such a unique output. I cannot write the same book as anybody else. There could be 30 people in the room. We'll have the same input, but we'll process it differently. And therefore, we have these unique stories that we give to the world, which is important. Mm. So reading to me, I read a lot of personal self-help memoirs, fiction, romance, thrillers, you name it, I delve into reading. I have recently realized that one of the things that was killing my energy is a good day for me is 8 hours in the chair, not moving other than to my kitchen. That is so bad, guys. that is so bad. And I used to preach, yeah, you got to move your body. And then I spent a year, I was going through a couple of different things. I had, you know, my father passed. I was going through grief mode. I, you know, gained a lot of weight. There was a lot of different things, but I realized that by not moving my body, I was exhausted all the time. And it's like fuel in, fuel out. Mm-hmm. So I dedicated myself to 30 minutes. I do a 30-minute routine because I don't have time for the gym. Not that we can go to the gym anymore, but anything an hour will kill it for me. But you give me 25 minutes and then 5 minutes of stretching, I can do that. So I have found in the last 3 months that I've instituted this, it's amazing, Brian. I am writing better and more because I'm bringing the energy back into my body.
Right.
So that was huge. Yeah, and meditation, like, you know, I think meditation for the mind, 5 minutes, 20 minutes. How about 5 minutes of deep breathing in the morning and before bed? Mm-hmm. We have so much chaos coming in from the news, from social media. We need even 5 minutes to just breathe and like reset. So those are really some of the things that I've been doing that has worked really hugely for me.
Yeah, I love all of that. What I had a picture as you were talking, like I kind of saw it in my head of, I mean, like a person, you know, but energy like circulating, you know, and I think that's what exercise and in a way meditation does.
Yeah,
is it moves stuck energy. And it says, okay, you have even emotional energy, maybe stuck or, you know, whatever it might be stuck in your body. And by the exercise and by meditation, it just kind of cycles it out so that it's not staying within you and keeping you. I'm like making a circle motion as I'm talking, keeping you, sluggish and staying like a part of your body and your system.
Yes. And what you said was brilliant because I was concentrated on the physical, but when you're going through emotional things, whatever it is, everybody goes through so much emotional, that was stuck too, because the emotions get stuck in your body. And if you're moving and sweating, I forgot that also gets rid of it. It's, you know, this whole body mind thing is so important and missed. And when you're rewarded for not moving for 8 to 10 hours a day, you need to do something proactive. I realize that now. And I think that this could be a huge pivot in my life and my career.
Yeah. I absolutely love that. I think writers too, to a certain degree, writers generally, I'm going to underline generally one more time, because I'm the same way as you. I believe everybody has their own routine. They have their own rituals. They have their own writing practice. And, you know, a big part of this podcast is to explore as many writers' writing process so that the people who listen to it can be like, oh, you know what? I identify with that and I think that might help me. Like that's the entire thesis here.
Yes.
I think because writers tend to have a really broad emotional range in order to write. Like you can't write a character that you can't feel. You know what I mean? Like the limit of your feeling is the limit of your character range. And so because writers tend to be exploring all sorts of feelings, darkness or dark feelings, light feelings, they're kind of going across the range. What you're doing, this increased focus on moving energy and not letting it get stuck as a writer, I think is hugely, hugely, hugely valuable.
Yes. And see, I love how you're putting this into words because I had just like simplicity brain, like, I do not feel good. This is not working. I must move my body. Wow. I feel so much better. I am more productive. But everything you're saying is so brilliantly put. And it makes, I love the imagery of that just energy moving around. So, you know, your body feels good, but then you're able to open up and I think get deeper with your characters when maybe before it was kind of like, you know, putting slot A into slot B because I was so stuck and burnt out and nothing was moving. So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the reason, you know, you have a lot of famous writers throughout history, like hundreds of years of history of this, who, you know, their number one advice to writers would be like, when you get stuck, go on a walk. And there's a reason for that, you know, moving your body. I've had a couple interviews with this has come up, like these meditative movements, like running or cooking, you know, like chopping. I could chop vegetables all day because it's just like,
oh, can you come to my house, please? That's something I never reach nirvana with. Oh
my God, I love kitchen prep. I love when it's like, well, we need XYZ onions and peppers and whatever to chop. I'm like, okay, I'll sharpen the knife.
I love it.
Here I go. Because there's just something about the meditative movement that seems to flush out those energy centers to you just kind of feel different, right? It's like I like to run and in the morning I go on, I'm like, by run, I mean basically the same pace as really fast walking. Like that's where, yes. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
But it's about the experience and like the meditative, like I just sink into a different place that allows like me to be a different person when it's done.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the repetitive, I've heard that repetitive motions, what it does, it's calming your conscious brain that is saying, oh, we're running
right.
now.
Right.
And then it allows your subconscious brain to say, oh, cool. The conscious brain is busy. I'm going to play, you know? And I think that's what like showering has always been driving. I can't even tell you, Brian, no lie. I used to have to pick up my son every day, like for after track and after school. And I can't tell you, I've done this a handful of times. I've gone to the wrong school waiting. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm at the wrong school because I'm chasing a plot bunny or, you know, because I'm driving and my brain is conscious, but now I'm like, wow, I think I'm going to work out those blocks. So it's just really cool the way that happens.
Yeah. I love this whole topic I think is really underserved. I mean, we're spending an outsized amount of time on one topic than what's usual only because I feel like it's so underserved, this discussion of the use of energy. And it's weird how the universe does this. I wasn't going to say this, but I will now just because it's like, well, the coincidence is too strong. But I've been working on a free program to share with people exactly on how to like reset your energy and how to like look at energy as being the most precious resource you have, not time, right? Because again, like I said, you can have all the time in the world, but if you don't have the energy, what's it matter? And so
I love that so much. And nowadays, like you said, I think this is the time for it because people are digging a little bit deeper and they're noticing things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's brilliant. And what you say about time is interesting because I have noticed that I could have less time, but if my energy is good, I'm more productive in those 15 minutes. And if you give me 8 hours and I'm tired and burnt out, it is
right.
It's so interesting how that can work. So I love that you're doing that project.
Right. Yeah. With all the different types of energy too, because you can have a lot of physical energy, but if you have no creative energy or emotional energy, Like you can be like, well, I'm not tired, but nothing's coming out of me as I sit down to write. And vice versa. You can be like, I'm creatively pent up, but I didn't sleep last night. So my physical energy is so low. And so again, it's like the balance of all of these things for the writer, I feel like is one of these really underserved and under talked about. I think as you get into like Eastern philosophies, you tend to butt up against this a little bit more, the idea of like energy or chi or whatever it might be. And that really inspired me to be like, okay, how does this work for the writer? You know, how does it work when I am crazy energetic? I'm full of life for 30 minutes. And yet there can be times, like you said, I have hours to write and I'm just, there's nothing in the tank.
Yes. I think every writer out there has experienced that. I think also what the writer who has so many books behind and it's a full-time career and this is what it is. I feel like they even need it more because I remember when I was beginning, I don't think I would be as receptive to this conversation because I was like, no, you need to show me how to grow my followers or how to write better craft. But what people don't realize, and I would really encourage newbies to do that, is to listen to this energy because I think I could have saved myself a lot of things if I had focused a little bit more on this balance rather than, mm-hmm. you know, I need to make this, or I need to have a Facebook ad, or I need to, it's all important. Don't get me wrong. It goes in the bucket. But, you know, you have that balance of energy. Therefore, you write the best book that you can have. And that is really everything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to just pause because it's easy to not hear what you just said. And I want to like the whole thesis falls apart. Like this whole discussion falls apart. If what the last thing you said is not true, which is just writing the best book you can is everything. And I think coming from someone like you who has spent time on every list there is and has sold a zillion books and has seen, most people don't ever get the chance to hear from somebody who has achieved writerly success like you have. And so to hear you say that means way more than someone like me who has not spent time on lists, being like, you know what, even after that, it's still the most important thing. Not that, you know, paying the bills isn't important. I'm not saying that that's not important, but that when it comes to writing life, writing the best book you can is what matters even for you at such a level of success.
I have to tell you, my journey has been very interesting, and I'm not going to go deep into it, but I am one of these writers where I was born to write. So when I learned how to read at 7, I still have my old diary at 7. Like, oh, I like this guy on TV. And when I'm a writer, a full-time successful writer, like there was just never any, that's what I was going to do. And I wrote my very first book at 12 years old, longhand. It took me a year. And I bound it in a folder and I brought it to junior high and my friends passed it around. And then I wrote a sequel. And I have been writing nonstop for my entire life. Sometimes it's been in the forefront. Sometimes it's been, you know, when I was putting myself through my English master's degree and I had 2 kids in diapers and I had a full-time job, no lie, with an hour and a half commute one way. Oh, I still found a little bit of time. Not maybe to write my book, but to say, wow, being a new mom is hard and, you know, starting a mommy blog or something. Mm-hmm. So going to now, even throughout this career where the most, you know, I always wanted to be able to write full time and be able to pay bills. I never really thought I want to be a number one author. I want to do this. And then what happens is the goalpost keeps moving. You're like, oh, now I think yes. I want this. Now I think I want that. But there was a period, I will tell you, there was a come to Jesus moment in my life where my book had gone viral. And it's a very funny story because when it was launched, we all came down with stomach viruses. And this was a book I had worked on for 5 years and was rejected by every major agent and company in New York City. Nobody would buy this book. Finally found a small digital publisher that said, hey, this is a great book. And I'm like, somebody finally sees that I think this is a good book. Took a chance on it. I got the stomach virus, was in bed for 48 hours, came back out and look on my computer and the book is number one on Barnes & Noble and Hunger Games is number two. And so I said, oh, you know, the computer's broken. And I called my husband in and we unplugged the computer because we were like, this is impossible. This stuff doesn't happen. So
oh my God.
Forward like 2 years later, right? And I'm thinking now I'm at the height of my career. You know, I was writing like a book every 3 to 4 months to try to pump out backlist and not waste my opportunity. I wrote this book that meant the world to me. And the book released and it did not hit the Times. It hit the USA Today and it did not hit the Times. And that night I cried and I felt like the biggest failure ever. And I said to myself, I let my editors down. I left my agent down. I let my read. I just felt like, and then I had that moment where I reached deep in and I said, oh my God, when I was 12 years old, I wanted one person to read my book. And I thought that was a success. And then I thought this was a success. Right. And then it was a success. And I realized I had burnt myself out on expectations that I really had no control over. I had no control over a Times list or my reviews or anything else. And so at that moment, I said to myself, I really looked at the book from inside my heart. And I said, did I write like the best book that I could? And this is the key, guys, at the time, not 10 years from now, when I'm a different person, at that time.
Right.
And I swear, Brian, my heart lightened and I said, I bled on the pages of this book. I felt like it was one of the most beautiful books I have ever written. And I calmed down and I said, I have got to find a way out of this mess I've made in my mind about expectations and what's important. And from then on, I have not, sure, I'll have my ups and downs. I'm human, you know, it's like, but I go back to that girl and what is really important. And what's important is, did I do my job? Is the book beautiful? Did I give it my all? And then it's not mine anymore. It's the world's book. I did my job. And now it's time to do my next job. So I hope that wasn't like a crazy, like, forefront of emotion, but that's where it led me.
I feel like that's like what you're describing is in like different steps, exactly what the entire How Writers Write platform is all about. It's almost like using similar language. We like the same people in different bodies. So much of what you say, I'm like, yep. Uh-huh. And I've heard myself even say some of the, I haven't heard a lot of people use the term goalpost. I'm like, I love that term. And like, come to Jesus. I'm like, who's this person? So I'm a little taken back because I'm like, everything you've said, I so fully am like, yes, like there is, we all have this desire, I think, to it's built in to be successful in the way that the world values and judges success.
Yes.
And for writers, there's just a couple ways that people are like, well, you did good or you didn't do good.
Yes.
And the more I have the opportunity, that's why I have the best job in the world, but the more I have the opportunity to talk to writers who, you know, have climbed to the heights that so many writers daydream about, and they look down and they say what you're saying, I feel like it helps strengthen the idea and maybe even reinforce to people out there that, you know, it's about the book in front of you. It's about the work. It's about expressing yourself onto the page. And you said bleed onto the page, like you bled into it. And it's like, at the end of the day, you're right. You don't control the bestseller list and you don't control an agent and you don't control an editor and you don't control so much of this process, but you do control to a certain degree what winds up on the page.
Yes. That is your holy grail.
Right.
And you're going to teeter and totter and find yourself down the path. And I just feel like it's important to talk truth because I couldn't say that 10 years ago. I was a different person. I was a different writer. And so all the career authors, but especially the new writers who could get burnt out way too fast and can be so cruel to themselves because we're so competitive usually with ourselves. And when we're envious of somebody else, it's not like we want to take it away from them. We just want it too. That's a huge difference. Right. Like you're not looking at like that number one New York Times and saying, I hate that person. I don't want this. You're saying, that's great, but can I have that too? And so, you know, that whole competition thing like messes up your brain also until you open up your page. And of course you can't write. Because you've got all these voices in your head from yourself of your expectations. So you have to find a way to clear that, you know, mechanism. I remember it, For the Love of the Game, I'm a baseball fanatic. Do you ever see For the Love of the Game?
I haven't, no, but I will now, yeah.
Oh, you must see it. It is such a spiritual thing. He's a pitcher, and during this movie, it's the last game in his career, and he's pitching a no-hitter. And every inning he uses this thing, this term, clear the mechanism. And it's when the crowds and the insults and the people throwing things and the cheers, it roars to a silence. And so I actually use that in one of my first books that I wrote, you know, telling writers, you have to find a way to clear the mechanism. Like not think about your elderly aunt who may read your sex scene. Like, how are you going to write a sex scene if you're imagining your elderly aunt? Like, dude, no, don't do that. Like you must find a way to get past that.
Yeah. I want to dig into your, how you do that in just 1 second, but I also want to connect it to a point that you were just saying, which is if you have these voices in your head, how are you possibly going to write? Like if you are showing up with anxiety or worry, or expectation that you're going to be a number one New York Times bestselling author, which would be great, but like that's a lot to place on yourself, you know, as you're writing a book. It makes me immediately makes me think you're not going to write because those things are what's stealing your energy.
Yes. Going back to energy. Right. Wow. We did energy. This naturally. Look at us. Go us.
but those things are what are where you're investing your energy. And of course you don't have enough energy. There's literally not enough gas in the tank to say, I'm going to pay attention to, being a bestseller and my aunt who's reading my sex scene and do all those things, pay attention to all those things, give all those things energy, and also give enough energy to the page to get the writing done. Like there's just not enough. Like most people don't have those energy stores in order to do that.
Brian, you have to put that into what you're doing, because that is so true, because that monkey mind is like stealing all of your energy.
Yeah. It's funny, cause I'm like the universe is just confirming. My wife is my partner in this. She does a lot of like behind the scenes stuff. And this morning we were having our coffee and, she was up late thinking about stuff. And then we were talking about this new program that I'm building. And it's interesting. I was just talking about it like an hour before we started this interview. And now it's so strong and prevalent in this interview in a way that I don't feel like I tried to bring it up. Hopefully,
no, it's universe.
Like, manifest it. Yeah, the universe
there's
is just
no
like,
coincidence.
Yeah, the universe is just like, all right, you're swimming in this. You're swimming in this.
You got your response there. Right, like, okay, seriously. I got to go do this.
So I know people listening out there are going to say, this is all great, but how? Like, always going from like the theoretical we're talking about to the how is really important. And so like for you, so that somebody can be like, okay, here's a starting point. How do you clear your mechanism?
So when I say, I mean, I think everybody, again, I'll talk to you about me, but the work here, and it's the same thing that I always say, writing to me is the most magical, because I can sit here for 6 hours and tell you how to write characters and how to do this and how to do that. But you will have no idea how to do it until you start practicing it, until you start writing. Writing cannot be learned. It has to be self-taught in a way. That's how you find your voice. So for me, sure, I love my routines. You know, in the morning, I get my coffee, I do my dog thing, the kids are on the bus, I sit in my sacred space, which is my office. But to be honest, this is not required, because I used to have to find my energy and clear the mechanism when I had two toddlers running behind playing hide and go seek, and I faced a wall in like a shack that we used to live in. I mean, it doesn't matter where you are. You don't need a beautiful space. You make the space within yourself. So the best thing that works for me is when I open up the document, I take a deep breath and I remind myself that it's not about anybody else, but my muse, but my story. And my job on the rough draft is to trick myself and say, this is what I say all the time. I have permission to suck. In fact, my goal right now is to suck on the page. It is to write as sucky as I can, because I'll fix that all later. I'll figure it out later, but I would never start, because I would be too much of a perfectionist. How can you even read a paragraph, you know, when you're constantly in your mind, this. My whole thing is be brave. Everybody is so brave the minute they start writing, whether it's, you know, in the middle or the end, or you open up your document and you start to write. I don't want to say to the plotters out there, the plotters need to plot and they need to outline. They need to know where their story is. So you can take that same kind of energy to your plotting. Maybe you're afraid to start even plotting because you have this whole big expectation in your head and these voices. You need to take your deep breath. You need to remind yourself that you're brave, and you have to remind yourself that you're going to write the suckiest book possible and it's not going to matter. And then through that, you have something to fix. You lure the muse to play with you, because you've allowed her to come out because you're going to suck anyway. Does that make any sense?
Okay. 100% makes sense. And I think there's so many things in this that are so important. Like, I feel like everyone should just play everything you're saying at slow speed so they can think about what you're saying and like absorb or like push pause a bunch, because there's so many important things in what you're saying. One of them being, you don't learn writing by thinking or wanting to write. Like, it sucks. It's kind of like fitness. Like you can only learn writing by writing. And like, it's the same way. Like, you can't, like, nobody ever thought or wanted to run a marathon and showed up and was able to run a marathon. You actually have to train for it. Like, there's no shortcuts.
Yes.
Writing is really unique in that you can't buy your way into writing.
Yes.
Like,
which
no matter
I love
what.
Because that evens the field.
Right.
And if you're a hard worker, you can get there. That's cool.
Right. Now, of course, people are born into certain advantages that will give them a certain starting place, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be dismissive of that, because I do think, you know, if you are in a certain kind of scenario and you grow up a certain way and you have a certain kind of influence, of course, you'll come out of the gates in a different spot. I'm not
totally
saying that.
Agree with you.
Right.
Totally.
But at the same time, you know, I went to school and I've been able to now interview and spend time with, you know, I think I did the count and it's like 50 something authors across the spectrum, some debut and some, you know, like yourself selling millions of copies of books, right? So a lot of different experiences. And they, and everyone I've interviewed and all the people I've been able to be engaged with, it kind of always comes down to there's just a certain work ethic and a certain amount of activity and action it's going to take to be a writer. And that's just a flat statement, which I don't tend to make.
Yes.
Right. So I think there's something so incredibly important in that piece of it. And the second part of it that I think is so important is giving yourself permission to just write and not need to be the polished draft. I think a lot of people think when they would hear someone like you talk, they would be like, oh, certainly she sits down and just writes rainbows.
You know, like, oh God, like, how I wish.
Like it's a beautiful, perfectly crafted prose. And like, it's this joyful, like smile on your face experience. And I think it's reassuring for even someone who sold a million copies of a book, which is bonkers, to hear you say like, listen, it's still hard. I still don't write good first drafts.
No, Brian, I don't. I've got to tell you, like, if anybody thinks this is a magical, mystical career, yes, it is. But it is sweat worthy. It is slogging through mud. It is showing up every day, just like a day job, at the page, ready to open yourself up. And I can't even tell you, you've got emotions going on. Maybe you're going through a difficult time. Maybe, you know, something upset you with social media, yet you have to show up every single day and put your very best onto the page. And the way you do that is you write every day, whether you want to or not. And I'm not saying you can't take, you know, if you're on vacation, I'm not saying don't write. I'm saying like a gym, like you said, you train your body by working muscles. If you go to the gym once a week, yes, good for you. At least you're opening up the channel. But are you going to be a master marathon runner? No, you're not. So the better writer you are, the more you commit to the writing in whatever aspect that is. And that is just simply not glamorous. It is isolated, lonely, sometimes depressing. It's this whole ball of wax. And I think people need to go into this career knowing that that's part of it too.
Right. And if you're waiting for it to get easier, it's not going to.
No, I'm sorry, guys.
Right.
Please don't throw apples at me.
But it's that's just reassuring. Doesn't. But you know what?
To me, that's
reassuring. And to me, I feel like that's a message of empowerment.
Good.
Like because now, one of the big excuses, this kind of sucks if you're hearing it and that's been an excuse, but like one of the big excuses I hear all the time from writers, all the time is I'm waiting for something I'm waiting for. And it could be, I'm waiting for more research or I'm waiting for more energy.
Yes.
I'm waiting for more time. I'm waiting for something else to happen that will give me the, permission to write. You said this, giving yourself the permission. And like that permission does not come from anything outside of you. It comes from inside of you. You give you the permission and it may not be perfect. It's probably going to suck and it might be tough to do, but we're all in the boat together. Like there's something comforting of knowing like this is just the life for whatever reason we decided to pursue.
Yes.
For better or worse.
Yes. And I love that. And I hope that the listeners of this podcast, if they're out there and they're the newbie writer waiting, just finish the podcast, open up a Word document, open up the notebook, and just stop waiting, because it starts like everything, right? It starts with the first step, starts with the first word. It's just give yourself the outlet that you need, even if your goal is not to be a career author. You know, it's what if it's just like to write that book of your heart and then you'll retire for the rest of your life. That's a lofty goal. So just start.
Right.
It's just like anything else. It's not going to get easier until you begin.
Oh my. There's so much in this. I like
We could probably do a whole 8-hour thing because I'm just like so vibing. I love talking.
I know. Same here. I mean, it's like there's so many There's so many like intersections here that are so interesting to explore, and I feel so aligned with. And I'm looking at my question sheet. So I, in most interviews, I show up.
Did we go through any of them?
Three pages of questions I show up with. I'm not sure I touched on any of them. We had the first question where I asked you, what's the greatest thing that's happened to you in the past week? We started there.
But we came full circle.
We skipped two pages. And now we are here at the end. And I don't want this interview to end. Maybe we'll do a version two someday.
That sounds great.
But now is the time I ask this. I ask every guest on the podcast the same four questions.
Okay,
and,
cool.
It is just such a fun way to round out the podcast. It's such a fun baseline. Some of them we've touched on, but you know, we'll just kind of put a bullet point. It's kind of like a headline. If you were to buy a billboard, this is what you'd put on the billboard. So
okay, I love that.
Okay, so question number one. If you had to pick a spirit book, which is like if you died and were reincarnated as a book,
yes,
what book would that be?
The book would be The Art of Racing in the Rain by Garth Stein. Have you ever read it?
No.
Oh, it's okay if you haven't. And I know I probably surprised you because it's not a romance novel, which is my passion and joy. But I am also a huge rescue animal advocate. And this takes place in the point of view of a dog. And the writing is the most beautiful. And I also believe that Enzo, which is the dog's name, is the greatest character ever created. And I have reread it several times. They made a movie out of it. I liked the movie, but you have to read the book. It's just different. Movies are different. So don't go to the movie, even though it was good, but you read the book. That is my spirit book.
Okay. That I'm going to put that on the list. Okay. I'm a big dog person too. So,
then you'll love this.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Question number two. Is there a specific tool? So it can be anything, a pencil, software, chair that you absolutely must have to write.
Yeah. For me, it's Word. I've tried Scrivener. I've tried Google Documents. I've tried a whole bunch of really fancy software that gives you all these great tools. And then I don't know what's up with her, but my muse goes, nope, not going to write for you today. And I'm like, really? You need a Word document. Everything else I can write without. I'm not attached because I have learned from survivor mode of being a mom with two toddlers and a full-time job that I can write anywhere, anytime.
Right. I love that. Absolutely love it. Okay. Question number three. This is one we definitely kind of touched on, but how do you deal with the constant ups and downs of the writing life?
Yes, we did talk about this a lot. I try to reset every day. Every time I open up that page, sometimes I'll read the last page that I wrote. Sometimes I refuse to read anything. I just start anew wherever that chapter or scene went and I push myself through. Mm-hmm. There's no secret sauce. That is the honest to truth. Some days are harder than others. And I'll be honest, some days I'm in front of Bravo with my dogs under a blanket and my husband will come home from work and I'll say, this is a true conversation. I'll yell at him, ask me how many words I wrote today. And he's like, how many words did you write today? And I go, zero, zilcho, loserville. And he's like, are we going to have dinner tonight or is this going to be all night like this? And, you know, and then other times I have risen to the occasion to write 5K in a day and it's been great. So accept the ups and downs and try to approach your writing fresh every single day and know if it was a bad day, guys, tomorrow you get a redo. It's fresh.
Yeah, I love that. I could go rabbit hole right on that one too, but I'm not going to. Okay. The final question of our final four is, and again, this is another question we've kind of touched on, but if you had to pick one thing, if you could give one piece of advice to new writers out there, what would that be?
It's something that guided me since I was 12 years old, and it's perseverance. It is a deep core belief in yourself, even when the world tells you not to. It is when I had an actual situation where my 10th grade English teacher, who knew I wanted to be a writer, came to me at the very last class and said, I don't think you should take advanced English, and I really don't think you'll ever be a writer. That is a true story. And I went home and I said, I can't be a writer. I didn't know I couldn't be a writer. I must suck. She's an English teacher. She knows. And it was devastating. And I toppled off for several days. And then somehow, because this has served me through rejection after rejection and so many downs, there'll never be a book worthy enough to tell you all the downs I've had. I came out and I said, well, who the hell is she to tell me I can't be a writer? She's not even a writer. She's an English teacher. So I kept that light on and I kept pushing. And perseverance is the reason, of course, yes, with craft and talent and luck and all that, but it is really the reason I'm sitting here today, because I never quit. So please be kind to yourself. Please don't let the world and everybody say it's a nice hobby. You'll never make it. What are you, crazy? Get a nice business degree. Just believe in yourself. That's it.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. It reminds me of a Babe Ruth quote, which he said, it's hard to beat somebody who doesn't quit.
Yes.
Or won't quit. Something along those lines, but that's like the idea. Like, yes. It's hard to lose if you'll never quit.
Yes. Make Rocky your mentor. He is my mentor.
Right. Yes. Jennifer, I could keep going and going and going. I feel like I'm sensing a round two of this podcast at some point in the future.
I would love that.
But I just want to say thank you so much for your time, for sharing such incredible hard-fought lessons. I mean, the thing I kept thinking when you were speaking is it's like this is decades of experience that myself and all the listeners have the pleasure of hearing. And that is such a gift for you to share with me and with the How Writers Write community. So thank you so much.
You were so
such a pleasure. Yeah.
I cannot thank you enough, because honestly, being able to share those experiences to me are so important. It really is, because I know when I was coming up, oh, how I just listened to all of the people and their lessons and their experiences. And, you know, if you take one sentence or one thought, you're ahead of the game. That will work for you. And Brian, honestly, I love this. I hope you pursue the energy. I think it's needed in the world, and your listeners are grateful that very, very lucky to have your podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Such kind words. And away we go. Off into more writing.
Okay, Jennifer, thank you again. Peace out, everybody. Okay,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you again to Jennifer for her time. If you haven't yet, please check us out on iTunes, and you can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Last, thank you again, dear listener, and I hope you have a wonderful week of writing.